First of all, I think the thing that struck me most was how, in one way, a short time, so much has happened. We had that preparation for the synod. It seemed to take a long time before between the one synod and the next, but that was quite deliberate because we needed time to see how far we had implemented the first part of our program, our vision for Africa, if you could say the synod is about a vision for Africa. And when one thinks that the reason for delaying the second session was precisely to give bishops an opportunity to implement what could be implemented, to see what could not be done so easily, and to look at that for the next synod. So the very fact that the choice of subjects, reconciliation, justice, and peace, were taken out of quite a multitude of other subjects that were suggested by the headings of the chapters of the previous of Ecclesia in Africa in the previous synod, where justice and peace was selected as the area where Africa needed the most intervention. Well, when the Pope was signing there, I was just thinking, gosh, here we are moving now to reconciliation, justice, and peace. We mustn't forget the others, evangelization, but it's our way of evangelization, looking at these three topics in particular.
He points out that the document contains precious principles and guidelines for the church in Southern Africa.
I think, if anything, we are in South Africa at present in our Bishops' Conference, I should say Southern Africa because it includes Swaziland, Botswana. We are actually involved in a process of evangelization. How do we evangelize ourselves rather than simply catechized into knowing something about the faith? How do we actually live that faith and pass it on to others? So I think reconciliation, justice, and peace are a new challenge from the perspective that while we're talking about evangelization, this friendship, this relationship with Christ, we mustn't forget that Christ is in these brothers and sisters that need our intervention as far as justice, peace, and reconciliation in particular are necessary. And I would say in South Africa at the moment, we're going through a period where the governing party, which had a very high ideal and a high vision under Mandela and even under Thabo Mbeki, has now got to the point where I think it's lost touch completely with the vision, and the people in government are looking after themselves and not worrying about the people. So I think the message that will come out of this document will be very relevant to South Africa. It'll give us as bishops something to put on the table and say, Mr. President Jacob Zuma, this is what the church is saying we need to do in South Africa.
And how relevant is this document to politicians as it raises issues such as good governance and human rights?
You see, just recently there have been a lot of people saying the voice of the church is silent. We who were quite vocal during the time of apartheid have seemingly lost our voice. It's true and it's not true at the same time. On the one hand, what is true is that after 1994, we believed that the people who had fought for liberation, who had enunciated all those principles, South Africa according to the Freedom Charter, which was the basic document that I believe Nelson Mandela and his fellow leaders in the ANC had in mind, Buthelezi in the IFP, and all the other different sectors of the liberation movement, they all had those principles in mind, that South Africa was going to become a non-racial, non-sexist, democratic country in which everybody would have a place. We've seen that slowly being whittled away, eroded away, that vision, so that now it's a case of disadvantaged communities, black empowerment, this, that, and the other. So people are being excluded once again on the basis of race and color and culture. And this for us is a very sad thing because we had put our trust in these leaders that they would stick to the principles, the high principles that Oliver Tambo, Mandela, and so on had spoken to us about when we were involved in the liberation struggle with them. And to see now that same organization abandoning those principles and almost putting apartheid in reverse. So I think this document is going to give us the grounds upon which to hold a dialogue with the government. And I think it's going to help us to find our voice as well.
And what about role models in Africa? Are there currently any political leaders in Africa that can be looked up to as people we can proudly say they are good Catholic or Christian leaders?
I think by and large one would say it would be very difficult to find any leader in Africa who stands out simply as being a Christian and following Christian principles, let alone a Catholic who's following the Catholic social teaching as well. I think you'd battle to find them. You'd probably find them in lower positions, because at the moment, I would say in Africa, the priority concern is power. And that's all people are interested in. And if riches give you power, they want the riches so they can maintain the power. And that's the kind of play we're seeing in South Africa. In a way, I think the document that was issued recently on economics is another one that we need to really study. We haven't done that yet. We really need to get our hands on it, study it, and relate it to the Munus Africae, I think it's called, the new document. When we get that there, then we'll be able to have a right hand and a left hand with which to engage with our politicians.
Now the journey is over, the document is signed, and a copy of it is in your hands. What happens next? How will implementation of this document even begin to take place?
Well, I suppose, first of all, we've all got to get copies of the document. It will have to come onto the agenda of one of our bishops' conference meetings. So far, I don't think there's any provision, certainly not for the January one. There's no provision made for that there, because we anticipate that it'll be some time before everybody's got the document in their hands. Then it'll most probably be put into the hands of the Justice and Peace Commission or Department of our conference for them to study it and to come up with recommendations of what actions can be taken as a result of the document. I would see that probably the process that would be followed would be that our president, Archbishop Buti, who's here and is going to be receiving the document, is very forthright. He's going to study that thing upside down and back to front. He's going to look at it from every angle. And I'm sure he's going to make it the subject of his president's report, his president's vision of what the conference should be engaging in. And I'm in that there, I would imagine he will be laying out some ideas of how we can relate what the document is saying to what we already have made our plan of action for the future. I don't think there's any contradiction in it. If you've got evangelization, personal relationship with Christ, evangelizing your parish so that through the parish the church can evangelize society. I think when you've got those as your dreams, your objectives, you're already on the way towards something more practical like reconciliation, justice and peace. So probably we would also need to make sure that our diocesan justice and peace commissions get hold of the document and study it and come up with the recommendations of what can be done in order to implement those aspects of it that fall to the diocese. If I remember correctly, the propositions upon which this document is based had some very explicit things to say to government at different levels. And I would see that where we have failed perhaps up to now to take the actions that even the message to the church in Africa had specified as things that could be doing, where we have omitted them or only done them incompletely, this document will reinforce us into, I'd say, taking another look at it and taking steps to implement it as well.